to continue with Bart Bach on 5 December 78. You were saying that the American optical astronomers
were, for example, this, as I said, after I had come back from South Africa in 1961-62, by the president of the Astronomical Society, by Joy, who was then, or maybe it was before that, I think it was after 1961-62. Anyhow, Joy was president, and I was asked to make an after-dinner speech about the promise of the Southern Hemisphere. When the talk was over, Joy, that had to be a little flippant, and maybe a little hard for him, but he said, well, it's interesting that my box wants the astronomers to go to the South. I would like a long list of people to make up of people we want to get rid of in the North, and we can have them and build it southern astronomy. That was sort of to be, and everybody, ha ha ha.
That was the attitude. Yeah. Before we started recording, you told me about Menzel's attitude towards the radio astronomy.
Well, that's not much friendly to solar radio astronomy, but Menzel and Whipple both felt that I just cost half of too much and brought no money in. That was the day of the big military support.
Right.
Menzel had the Air Force, Whipple had the Signal Corps, and the Army working for him, and they were all this military project.
Mm-hmm.
And then they said, there comes Bart Bach, he brings in no money, he has cost us money, and he works on a silly Milky Way. And Whipple went so far as to say, well, Bart, why don't you get wise and start studying meteors? They're the cheapest slugs that God Almighty in his wisdom puts high up in the sky, and they make radio reflections. You can finance all your stuff if you just get a contract. Signal Corps, you study, you see plugs that go up and down there, and you can do a lot, and then on the fly you can do your silly radio astronomy on the Milky Way.
Now, you mentioned another thing before we started recording, and that was the colloquium that you heard Ewan give when you came back from South Africa.
That's right.
It was actually a physics department colloquium.
It was a physics department, but notices were sent out to the astronomers that this was to be his report on the 21 centimeter, and it was Ewan, who just got a doctorate, who just was wanted to give his colloquium paper. And I thought that all the astronomers who loved it would be there. This hotel was idling, it seemed as though it was all. But when I came, there were only physicists there, and I was the only astronomer sitting on the back row, and nobody else was there from that old astronomy department. So the same sort of thing is, it was not an anti-radio astronomy feeling, but not feeling everybody feeling like I had it in the 30s, that as we had more important things to do, we should pay attention to that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
That's what the way it was.
When do you think finally optical astronomers, majority of them anyway, came to accept?
Oh, that was the middle 50s. Okay. Then, for example, Jay Peachin and Ed Lilly and I and Doc Ewan presented papers at the Astronomical Society. They were listened to very, very carefully and given very good treatment overall. The more and more the radio astronomers began to enter the picture. The Dutch thing made quite an impression for us all. Holland's for radio optical combined from the very from the very start. And by that time, it became a highly respectable thing. And for example, the National Science Foundation, one of its first big grants was for the 62 radio telescope at Harvard. That came even in part, I must tell that story, but that's a rather nice one, that came in part from the old office of NATO research, and then they handed it over to the Science Foundation, and Alan Waterman, who was office of NATO research, became the head of NSF. Well, I remember what Doug Ewan and I did. We made a model of our radio telescope, and it cost us, I remember, $1,100, which was a lot of money, but proved to be a very good investment for the Office of Naval Research. Admiral, who was in charge of all grants for naval research, came to Harvard to look things over, and his ABC, some sort of a lieutenant commander, stood by my side and said, the Admiral really loves astronomy. He loved research, but the Admiral also liked to see And then during the time that we started setting up National Radio Astronomy Observatory in Greenbank and the site selection, there was a lot of interest in it. And there was already competition then of the West Coast wanting to have it come on the West Coast.
The National Observatory?
And there were really quite a bit of competition. And then this was a 65 special, always had some big thing like that to set up. But then the optical astronomers were already quite deeply involved.
Right. But in fact, the East Coast was where the radio astronomy had been for the previous years.
Yes, but Caltech wanted to get into it in a big way and was ready. And maybe it would have been a good idea to set up right in California from the start. But in those days, we were given a very simple assignment that you ought to try and find a place for the National Radio Observatory within easy reach of Washington, D.C. Right. And one of the arguments was that clearly the big optical observatory, Kitchen and others that were being talked about, that they should get up in the west. That therefore it would be good to have the other center in the east.
Hundreds of like that.
That was done first, a nice sort of political decision.
Let me ask you about the...
That was a very nice committee to have belonged to, the one that Lloyd Berkner, with Emberson,
Tuva was on it, and
Emberson was the executive officer. Tuva was on that committee,
Hagen, I think.
And Paul Hagen, John Hagen was on it. John Hagen is a good man to interview.
And also, I think through his archives, which are in the Library of Congress, they were very helpful for this formation of NRL. Let me ask about your philosophy. I think it's your philosophy of doing radio astronomy, and it agrees with the Dutch philosophy also, namely that the astronomers don't have to build the equipment. That you should have an engineer that builds it, and then they use it. You feel that that's more efficient way to do things?
That's it, yes. But for example, then this way, I was sounded out as one of three or four candidates for the first directorship of NRAO at the same time that I got the offer from Australia to go to Stromlo. I had resigned from Harvard and had no job for 3 months, so that was really very interesting over there in the past of life and all the other political troubles. Anyhow, then I took the Stromlo loan, because I felt if I had taken the NRAO job, I would have had to depend too much on electronic engineers to do the basic developing what can and cannot be done. Whereas with optical telescopes, especially the photometer, I can play the whole piano and know precisely how it all goes.
But you had been directing such a program for 3 years at Harvard.
Yes, but that was because
were you feeling frustrated?
No, not frustrated.
You didn't have control of electronics?
Yes, in some ways, yes. In some ways, yes. I had my, Doc Ewan was a very good friend, but also a good operator, both. And often I didn't know where one stopped and the other one came in. And therefore I felt that the Harvard experience had shown that I would not make a good director for a national radio observatory, because my whole background was not electronics, but was basically straightforward optical astronomy.
Right.
There's a strong interest in the radio. And therefore, also in Australia, while I furthered, just like I had done at Harvard, as strong as possible the development of radio astronomy, and that was doing fine then as radio physics, a bit of a goal as well right now, what you have then is, there I felt I was best off again, not digging in, not being directing me, Becky Joe Porter, Jesse Bowen, John Bolton, and the rest of the day.
Right.
But I would come in as the optical astronomer who would back him up and come in on the optical relations side.
Okay, along this same line, it seems to me, now you may disagree, that there were a number of mistakes made in the observational results that were published from the Harvard Final Centimeter program, various detections that weren't real and profiles that were not reliable. Do you think that this can be related to the fact that the astronomers using the equipment didn't really understand
what
was going on?
In part, didn't understand what went on. The way Doc Ewan always said, I built a black box, you plug it in and know where to look.
Mm-hmm.
And that decision of labor was done a little, perhaps too far, and we did not have high level enough engineering advice in it. On the other hand, out of that group has come now the best set of observatory, radio observatory directors that ever was. The Heaton, the Lilly, the Frank Drake, they all came out of that mixed up affair.
Right.
And they certainly have shown that the whole training program there was worthwhile. And the sad part was that after I quit, I thought it would go on indefinitely, and it didn't. And only later on, then the molecules began to come in. Harvard Radio Astronomy came back in its own, but by that time, Harvard had never reached the top level in producing future radio astronomy.
Right.
So that's what we had in the 50s.
Right.
I was, of course, very fortunate. Not only was a small group, 12 students, the maximum we ever had, if we put them all in, and of the 12, about 8 or 10 have key positions now everywhere.
Although, of course, a part of that was that they were in the ground floor of American Radio Astronomy.
And that nobody else was there.
Right, right.
Yes, but they were also
good. But they were also good. Right.
Yeah, that's the thing. That's the nice thing. Well, that's the ground floor, that's right. But they could have run the thing in the ground if they had not been competent. But I was very lucky that purely, that not teaching me, but that purely by chance, I got this wonderful bunch of students there, and we had a feeling of a mission, and we all dug in as quick as we could. And there were quite a few good things that came out of the Harvard thing. Close to Manning's work on the Orion region, Dave Heaton's first detection of the exhaustion near the galactic center came out of it. Ed Lilly's fact that 21 centimeters is not overly concentrated in the large complexes, and that there ought to be basically molecular hydrogen.
Mm-hmm.
So quite a few good things came out, but it was never, and then by the time it was ready to go, I left for a reason that had nothing to do with radio astronomy, but that had to do with McCarthy era and Shapley and Christmas all over the place. And by that time, all my students had gone elsewhere, with the exception of Ed Lilly, and they were running almost everything.
Right.
We had a very nice thing that I remember one time when the Dickey Committee, you remember, in the 60s, met. They had a serious investigation about the future of radio astronomy to see. And there came a morning when we had the great hearing, and there were the representatives from all the major radio observatories in the country. Well, the representative of Caltech, well, first of all, the NRAO group was represented by Dave Beaton and Bill Howard, who were both former students of mine. Then there was the Arecibo group, and the representative there was Frank Drake, who spoke for a student of mine. Then the Harvard MIT group came with its proposal, Ed Lilly for a student of mine, and then Caltech had pulled out the big guns, and they had taken Jesse Ginstein for a student of mine. Then they got up, Jesse spoke up in a typical Jesse way and said, this is the standard, the damnedest meeting, that the damnedest investigation I mean, so all of us were speaking this morning in our district, have taken a PhD exam from Biosport many years ago. Why the hell do we have to take
second exam?
But it shows how that Harvard group spread out. You know? And they were in a vacuum, but they were needed, and they were trained deliberately just for that purpose.
And they stayed. I mean, they were That is the end of the interview with Bach on 5 December 78. And obviously the tape was malfunctioning, the recorder was all right, and so everything is too weak. End of this side of tape.